Hello and welcome to Avashin Podcast. In this podcast, we welcome guests who are waging a struggle. My name is Frederike Geerdink. I'm a journalist who writes and speaks about power structures and those who want to tear them down. This podcast is powered by Media News, which you can visit at medianews.net. Let me explain why this podcast is called Avashin, meaning blue water. Avashin is a region in the mountains of Kurdistan, where the river by the same name has its source. The Avashin is clear, blue, and sparkling, and an inspiration in the Kurdish struggle for freedom. In this episode, I'm honored to welcome Behrouz Bokani as my guest. Behrouz lives in Wellington, New Zealand. He's an author and an advocate for refugee rights. He was a refugee himself as a Kurd from Iran and spent years in Manus Island Detention Center, an island where Australia locked up refugees. From there, he published in international media to draw attention to the plight of refugees on Manus Island. The articles were sent via text messages, which is also how his first book, No Friends But the Mountains, Writings from Manus Prison, was written. It was translated into many languages. Bokani eventually received a refugee status in New Zealand. Welcome as my guest, Behrouz. My first question to you would be, what is the source of your struggle for refugee rights? Where did it begin for you?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I think, you know, as a Kurd, we born in a colonialism system. So we grew up in colonialism system. And that's why we engage with the struggle at beginning of our lives. So that is really important, this background, because as a Kurd, even if you leave Kurdistan and go somewhere, it doesn't matter where, we engage with the struggle in those societies as well. So I left Iran because of my cultural activism and my writing and journalism. And I went to Indonesia in 2013. And then I went to Australia by boat after a few months. When I arrived in Australia, they banished me to Manus Island in north of Papua New Guinea. And I was there in a prison camp for more than 6 years. When I arrived in Australia and when I found myself in that prison camp, I faced another colonialism system. How Australia established that policy towards refugees on based of colonialism mentality and history of colonialism in Australia. And obviously it's colonialism because they were using Manus Island and Nauru Island as a land of exile. So in fact, they forced those governments to accept that agreement to use their land as a cage. So of course it is colonialism, but it's not only that, it's related to history of colonialism in Australia. And that's why, and now that I ended up in New Zealand, so we have a Maori ethnic minority in New Zealand, and they have a long history of struggle against colonialism. But in New Zealand, we see the process of decolonization. So it's quite different with the place that I was born. It's different to Kurdistan. So I mean, that struggle actually is related to my background as a Kurdish, because in Kurdistan, we created a resistance knowledge. And in fact, I borrowed that resistance knowledge and reproduce it in Manus Island against another system, another colonialism system. So that is my answer to this question.
What is resistance knowledge? Can you explain that further, or can you give an example of how you use that in Manus Prison Island?
Yeah, resistance knowledge, it's a knowledge that a nation or a group of people create through resistance. So if you look at Kurdistan over the past century, the Kurdish people have been fighting so hard to keep their identity alive, to actually challenge the central government. And that struggle creates memory, that the struggle we see in our poetry, our music, our culture, cinema, that is a resistance knowledge that I'm talking about. And also how Kurdish people are radical in their resistance. And this radicalism, I use it as a positive word, how Kurdish people try to challenge the power structure,
That is what you mean with radical, like challenging the structures underlying the injustice.
Exactly. So when you fight for 100 years, of course, that means that fight, that struggle is go through generations, and you rely on the past generations. And now that created the knowledge. And that's why I use that and reproduce it in Manus Island. And it's really incredible that the refugees, as a marginalized people, they have created a body of works. And I'm just one of them. And now we have a body of works. We have a material. And I think that is important. That is a knowledge. And that resistance is not only writing or creating, even doing hunger strike, protest. All of that is a part of this resistance knowledge.
And now, you've been granted refugee status in New Zealand. And how you said, when I asked you, how should I describe you? Are you also an academic? Are you also a journalist? You said, I'm an author. How do you use this as an author?
I think that is quite interesting. Writers have this mentality that anything they do, in the end of the day, they call themselves a writer. For example, if I do, I don't know, anything, if I work as a driver, actually, that is a part of a process of writing as well. Because when you are driving, you see people, you hear their stories during the day. And those stories, those people, that experience feed your writing. So that's why even with filmmaking, even with academic works, anything that I do, this activism, and even now that I'm doing interview with you, that feed my writing, So that's why I say in the end of the day, writers are writer.
I recognize that very much. It's a role you can never really leave behind or stop.
But it's difficult to it takes time to declare that you are a writer as well.
I always ask the guest in my podcast what their methods are of struggling. So for you it is whatever you do, eventually your method to bring about change or awareness is writing.
I think so, but I do different works. You know, I do different activism, but most of my activism is about refugees. But anything that I do, whatever I do, a part of it is about Kurdistan. So even in the movie that I made about refugees, we see a layer about Kurdistan, you know, or in this, in No Front But the Mountains, you know, we have a layer, a clear layer about Kurdistan. So we cannot really get away of that, you know. It's, you know, as a writer, it's impossible for me to get away of being a Kurd or live as a Kurd. So always is there.
And you don't want to, I suppose.
Sometimes I want to get away of it for a while to have rest.
Yeah.
But it's there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always.
And
there.
What do you think? Because when I read your book years ago, I found it very shocking and very confrontating, and also the layers, like the philosophical layers that you put in. I loved the book. It was very educational, but it was so shocking. I thought this is going to end. This kind of colonialism cannot be. And now you see in Europe, where I'm now based, you see they actually take this Australian system sort of as an inspiration, with the UK wanting to bring people to Rwanda, with all the camps on the borders of Europe where people cannot make a living, have no future, where the circumstances are horrific. And I think back of reading your book and I think, wow, they're not taking it as a warning, but as an inspiration. And that is just absolutely horrible. Do you see that too? Like, is that part of your activism? Like, this is not an inspiration, this is a warning. How can Europe go this way? Or
yeah, exactly. I think that is not inspiration. I look at it as a model. And Australia introduced that model to other countries. So, I mean, when we say inspiration, that means that those countries look at Australia and inspired by that. But in fact, Australia has been active to introduce it. So, I mean that the former Australian Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, that while I was in Manus Island, he was the prime minister for 2-3 years. He went to UK and introduced this policy, this model to politicians there. And they look at it and now they are following that. So that is, of course, that's, you know, we were warning this for many years, but unfortunately, now we have it in Europe, and hopefully that just other countries don't follow the UK as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite sad that now it's became a model.
And what can you sort of, it's a little bit strange to ask this to one person, but what do you think you can do about it? What can you do to raise awareness, and what are you writing now? What are you planning on publishing?
Yeah, actually, recently I worked with my translators, Omid Tofik and Munis Mansoubi. So they translated my articles a long time ago when I was in Manus Island. I published 100 articles, almost 100 articles. So now we publish it as a book, and we invited some academics and writers to respond to my articles. So we don't include all of the articles, but some of them, like 30 of them. And now this book is finished now, so we will publish it in November. So November is coming out. So that is a work as a writer I did, but also I worked with some indigenous actors and directors in Australia, and it on a play, and this play is about refugees in indefinite detention and indigenous people in indefinite detention, and also we included other minorities as well, like Palestinians, and even we use some Kurdish musical elements in that work, and also some the transgenders, LGBTQ, so different kind of minorities and people who are fighting, you know, and some, you know, I think it's important that we have Palestine and Kurdistan on a stage. And we mentioned that. So this work is important, really. We now we will be in a festival in Hamburg in Germany. Yeah.
So in you're Hamburg. connecting different struggles, because eventually they are all struggles against the same oppressive mindset.
Definitely.
And system. Yeah.
It's so
but this
important.
This is in Australia and not in New Zealand.
No, that is in Australia. Yeah, that is in Australia. But I mean, you know, all of these minorities doesn't matter. And when I say minority, I don't think about how many population they have. You know, even in my perspective, women are minority.
Yeah, it's marginalized is the word
Exactly. So I think being a woman, being a Kurd, being a, you know, Maori, being a refugee, being, you know, anyone who is facing a power structure which is dominating them, all of them are fighting to keep their identity alive, you know. So it is the same mentality. So that's why we cannot really separate these people, you know. And yeah. Of course, in Kurdistan, we have minorities in Kurdistan as well, you know.
Christian groups and...
Yeah, and also we have women who are struggling for their rights.
Yeah, and the LGBT community is important.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that is really important that we link between different kind of, you know, group of people. And when we link that, actually, we became powerful and we can do something.
Yes.
We can support each other and learn from each other. Yeah, so that's why I say that any woman who really understands feminism and mechanism of power should be or should understand a Kurdish. Or
I totally agree. Yes.
Yeah, but that always doesn't work.
No,
because
true.
Because in Kurdistan, for example, we have you know, LGBT people who many people don't understand them, you know.
Yeah.
But if you try to understand, I think it's much easier.
That both groups, that both Kurds and LGBT people are marginalized. Yeah. But how does it work in New Zealand? Because you live there now, and you already mentioned the Maori community, which are the indigenous people, but they are marginalized. On the other hand, New Zealand, especially under the Prime Minister Ardern, has a very good image. What work needs to be done in New Zealand?
You know, in New Zealand, of course, this country is with a long history of colonialism. But now, fortunately, in New Zealand, I think a process of decolonization has started. So now we really see more Maori culture in public. For example, Maori language is an official language here, but you know, compared to Kurdish people, we are still fighting to keep our language, at least in most part of Kurdistan. And so in New Zealand, I think many people are understanding, and Maori resistance has achieved quite a lot, but still is not perfect. Still, the resistance is going on. But we see the process of decolonization. That is my understanding as an outsider, you know, as someone who came here and I'm just looking and, you know, naturally actually.
Looking and learning also.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But in New Zealand, I think New Zealand is a good model now, is going on this resistance, but I think this process of decolonization is really fascinating, and we see it. But it still is not perfect. Still, Maori people are facing discrimination. Still, Maori people are angry about this system. But you cannot achieve everything in a very, very short time. So it's
That's true.
But this process is there, and we see it, and we support it as a people.
How do you involve the Maori story, the Maori people in your work?
I just came here 3 years ago, and you know, for a year just I was sleeping, I was tired, but still I'm learning about this country. But definitely on future, and in my writing, when I write, sometimes even I am not aware of it, but you know, there is some elements of indigenous people in my work that again I link it between link it with Kurdish culture, you know. So that is Kurdish resistance. So it's there, and I'm just learning and following. But of course, in my activism, when I do events around the country or even internationally, right now, you know, like now that I'm talking with you, of course, I'm talking about Maori resistance as well. So that is a kind of support as well. That is a kind of course, I'm not talking on behalf of them, but as a person, I think it is my duty as a person who just came to this country to do something, you know. I'm not an important person in this
but
process.
But do they have a place in your book as well, in the book that's coming out in November?
Not really, because this work is for a long time ago. It's about, but indigenous people are there, you know. I link between refugees and indigenous in my work. And it's there. It's clearly there. And I think
it can also be present like between the lines.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't have really Maori voices there. But we have some articles from indigenous people.
Yeah.
But not really particularly about Maori people, because it's a word for a long time ago. Hopefully
yeah,
on future.
What is the title of the book going to be? Are you not sure yet?
Freedom, Only Freedom. Yeah, that is the title.
Freedom,
of
Only
the book.
Freedom. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I...
But I'm not sure that we can announce it now, because wait for the publisher to announce it. I think they are going to do it probably next month. Yeah.
Okay, okay. So
but it's okay. You can say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we won't make it a big announcement. Like on the one hand, you have this development in New Zealand where decolonization is apparently, you know, getting getting more attention. On the other hand, there's the way that the Western world treats refugees, and it's only getting worse. Where do you find hope? Where do you see the stars like that, that give you hope to continue writing, to continue contributing to the struggle?
You know, in Kurdistan, we say that Barfodan Jiana. It's mean that
resistance is life. Yes.
Yeah, resistance is life.
Yeah.
So we don't have a way but resistance and do work. Yes, it's quite difficult. It's paradoxical, but sometimes I really enjoy that I'm Kurdish.
Yeah, because the resistance is in your veins.
Yes, sometimes I really, because being a Kurdish actually force you to understand politics deeply. You know, force you to understand, to think and behave more with humanity, you know. And being a Kurd actually gave us too much, you know. But that is, I think, and make our life meaningful, you know. But I don't want to romanticize it.
No.
I don't want to romanticize it.
No, because you have this resistance in your veins also because the history is so painful and so violent.
It is there. But it's not only painful. We are fighter as well. We achieve.
Definitely.
And I think that is... So Kurdish people never picture themselves as a victim.
No.
And I think that is really important. You know, even when I reproduce that in Manus Island, I always try to picture refugees as I don't victimize them.
Yes.
And with anyone, you know, but Kurdish people and Kurdistan resistance is not based off victimization. You know, Kurdish people resist and fight. And that is, I think, quite remarkable in Kurdish culture and history.
Yeah.
But I do not romanticize it.
No, again, I understand.
Yeah, because in Kurdistan, we have lots of problems as well, you know, especially, you know, with women, you know. Still, our women are not really free. They are fighting for their rights. But there are many problems in Kurdistan, in Kurdish community, society. But generally, I think this nation has really created a remarkable and incredible resistance knowledge that we can learn, anyone can learn from Kurdistan resistance if you really want to study it and learn about it and understand it.
Yes, I agree. It's an interesting answer. I ask where your hope is. So actually your hope is in being Kurdish and having this resistance and this history that you can take in your activism.
It's quite a difficult question. What is the hope? Yeah. Still, you know, I really don't have a clear answer for that.
Okay, good. Well, Serkeftin, you're my first guest to whom I don't have to explain what Serkeftin means. Maybe the listeners want to know Serkeftin means be successful.
Yeah. It's more than that.
It's more than that for you. What does it? What is it more than be successful?
No. I mean, successful is quite a commercial word.
Hmm.
But in Kurdistan, when we say sarkaftan or sarkotan, means more than that. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah.
Yeah. It is more than just be successful.
To be successful, but that's more than successful.
Yeah, it's a be more successful meaningful. Is maybe a too literal translation, maybe, or too shallow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe we can talk about that some other time.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Avashin Podcast, powered by Media News. Your host was Frederike Gerink. The music you heard was composed and performed by Ula Sheshiel. I would appreciate it if you shared this podcast on any social media where you're active. Thank you in advance, and until the next episode of Avashin Podcast.